From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farming Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. Well, it's the Saturday of our big annual music sale happening right now. I hope to see some of y'all there later today. On today's show, Doug Deal of Friendly Acres Farm in Coshecton gives us his best tips on how to pick the perfect holiday tree. Yes, there's height and there's width, but there's also tree variety, freshness, and smell.
Canaan, Fraser, they all smell like oranges or something of the citrus family. Your spruce, that's a different smell totally. That's that woodsy smell.
Plus, we chat with the New York Agricultural Land Trust about a land access workshop series focused on achieving better land stewardship and equity for new and beginning farmers. All of that in Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report, but first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. Investigators are still searching for a motive for an Afghan refugee shooting of two National Guardsmen in Washington, D.C. this week. One of the soldiers has died. Army Specialist Sarah Beckstrom was memorialized in her hometown yesterday. She was 20 years old. Fellow West Virginia National Guardsman Staff Sergeant Andrew Wolf remains in critical condition. Retired General James Hoyer is a former Adjutant General of the West Virginia National Guard. He told NPR's Weekend Edition that the youth of these soldiers makes the case all the more tragic.
These were just young kids, 18 years old, when they made the decision to step up and be part of less than 1% of the population of this nation that serves in a military uniform.
The Trump administration now has halted all asylum decisions and paused issuing visas for people traveling on Afghan passports. Holiday flights this weekend are facing some disruptions after Airbus ordered immediate software fixes for a number of its aircraft, a move that has forced airlines to ground planes. Rebecca Rossman has more.
About 6,000 Airbus A320 jets worldwide, including several hundred in the U.S., are affected by the required software update. The order stems from an investigation into a JetBlue flight last month that suddenly lost cabin pressure while traveling from Cancun to Newark. An analysis found that intense solar radiation may have corrupted computer code critical to the aircraft's flight control systems. In response, the Federal Aviation Administration is directing airlines to install the software fix immediately. American Airlines says around 200 of its aircraft are impacted. Delta and United report only a small number of affected jets. For NPR News, I'm Rebecca Rossman in Paris.
A collection of anecdotal reports from the Federal Reserve points to a modest slowdown in consumer spending. NPR's Scott Horsley has details.
The latest beige book from the Federal Reserve shows most consumers are being extra careful about discretionary spending, although wealthy shoppers are buying just as freely as ever. The reports compiled by the 12 regional Fed banks around the country. About half those banks report a slowdown in hiring. Businesses say it's easier to find workers than it used to be, although some still struggle with the drop in the number of foreign-born workers. Many factories and retailers report higher costs associated with tariffs. Some of that cost is being passed on to customers, while in other cases it's eating into businesses' profit margins. Fed policymakers will study the beige book as they try to decide whether to cut interest rates again when they meet in a couple of weeks. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
President Trump says he plans to cancel all executive orders President Biden signed with an auto pen. Legal experts say that auto pen signatures have been used multiple times and recognized as valid. This is NPR News in Washington. An Israeli raid on a village in southern Syria has left at least 13 people dead. Syria's foreign ministry says women and children are among the dead. Israel says its troops were rounding up suspects from a militant group when they came under attack and subsequently returned fire. Pope Leo XIV has visited Istanbul's iconic Blue Mosque as part of this first trip of his papacy to Turkey and then Lebanon. NPR's Ruth Sherlock is traveling with this first American pope. She reports that Pope Leo showed respect at the mosque and chose not to pray there.
This was the first time Pope Leo has visited a Muslim place of worship since he became the leader of the Catholic Church. He removed his shoes, as is customary for entering the vast religious space, He walked in white socks across the red carpeted floor as he was given a tour by the mosque's imam and the mufti of Istanbul. The imam told reporters he invited Leo to pray, but the Pope declined. The Vatican said in a statement afterwards that, quote, the Pope experienced his visit to the mosque in silence, in a spirit of contemplation and listening, with deep respect for the place and the faith of those who gather there in prayer. Ruth Sherlock, NPR News, Istanbul, Turkey.
Parisian authorities believe they now have in custody the four people who executed the broad daylight robbery of crown jewels from the Louvre last month. The last of the four apprehended a few days ago. Police say he has a record that includes six criminal convictions. He's facing new charges of robbery by an organized gang and criminal conspiracy. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Bayer. Bayer is dedicated to delivering breakthroughs that save lives and feed the world using the scientific process. Learn more at sciencedelivers.com. This is NPR.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole, letting you know that Radio Catskill's big annual music sale is happening right now and going till 3 at the Liberty Mall. We've got tons of vinyl records, CDs, cassettes, cheap discs to buy in bulk, pricey platters for discerning collectors, plus turntables, stereos, instruments, and more. Stop by and say hi at my kitschy Christmas corner, and do not miss old school sessions, DJing live, big music sale going till 3 at the Liberty Mall in Liberty.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow West Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Well, I think it's safe to say now that we have Thanksgiving under our belt that the holidays are officially here. So let's see how well you know your holiday sounds. Sound familiar? That's the crisp sound of tree needles brushing. Fir tree needles, to be exact. Typically, when I think of Christmas trees, I think of how tall it is, or maybe how wide it is. But there's also so many other things to consider, like smell and variety. On Friendly Acres Farm in Coshocton, New York, there's more than 12,000 hand-planted Christmas trees. I recently chatted with Doug Deal, owner of Friendly Acres, who shared just how much variety and planning goes into making sure all of the farm's trees bring quality and magic to every home.
As you look up the row of trees, you'll see there's big and small mixed together. That's what I was talking about before. We gap up, we fill in. Where somebody cuts a tree, we put a new tree in the following year, if not the year after. Each tree is hand trimmed. So we come through starting in late July, August, and we hand shear every year. Every tree gets a trimming to keep its shape. Otherwise, they get kind of bushy and unruly, and we tend to let the trees determine how we're going to trim them. If it wants to be a wider tree, we trim them wide because some people like a wide tree. And then we have other trees that we kind of like stretch out and keep thin. Seems to be a popular thing to have a skinny tree, and some people just don't have the room in their house for a wide tree.
Here's Doug on the art of picking the perfect holiday tree.
Good morning, Doug Deal here. We're at Friendly Acres Christmas Tree Farm. We're in Coshocton, New York. We are located halfway between Fosterdale and Route 97. It is the old Baker Dairy Farm. I've been in my family since the 50s. Sullivan County, New York.
And tell me, so we're here on the weekend before Thanksgiving, but folks are already coming in to kind of pick their Christmas tree out. Tell me a little bit about kind of what we're looking at and how many trees are out here.
Surrounding the farm, we have a circle drive, which is our main location where we bale the trees and tie them to your cars and do the business. We have a small shack that we call the
the wreath shack. And inside here, we will sell wreaths. We'll do local honey and syrup made by my cousin over at Deal Heritage Farm. We do our own wreaths. We make our own wreaths. We make centerpieces. I also have a man that does pottery. You know, a pottery here. And then we have we'll have winterberry and other ornaments and stuff that we have for sale.
In addition to all of this, we have the main attraction, which are the Christmas trees. Tell me a little bit about the different types of trees that you have here on the farm.
Okay. So surrounding the barn and the house and that, we have 7 fields. All together, we have about 12 acres of trees in production. We're probably looking at anywhere from 12,000 to 13,000 trees on the property at present time.
That's a lot.
Everything here is hand planted and hand sheared and taken care of. It's all laid out nice rows. Everything is in space so we can mow in between with lawnmowers and stuff. As we on the farm, we grow, like I said, we're growing 5-6 varieties of fir. As you go through the fields, you'll notice the difference. Your concolor fir is a long-needled fir. Most of the time has a nice blue tint to it or a silvery shine to it. Can be a little greenish times too, all depending on seed source and how much wax is accumulated on the tree from fresh growth. The other fir we grow is Canaan fir. Canaan fir is a close cousin to Fraser fir. It's in the balsam family. It does have the blue undertones on the underside of the green needle. The difference between a Fraser and a Canaan is that the Canaan is usually less dense than a Fraser, just by habit. Fraser, if you hold one in each hand, the Fraser will weigh sometimes almost double the weight of a Canaan or a balsam.
How do they smell? Do they smell quite differently from one another?
All your firs have a citrusy smell. Each one has a distinct smell. Like a Douglas fir is like distinctly tangerines. Canaan, Fraser, they all smell like oranges or something of the citrus family. Your spruce, that's a different smell totally. That's that woodsy smell that everybody, you know, has grown accustomed to over the years. And then pine smells like pine. I don't know. There's nothing really other than, you know, that's what it smells like. As far as longevity, your firs are your longest needle-holding plants. So if you're cutting early like this weekend, which is the weekend before Thanksgiving, I would always suggest for anybody to cut a fir. The closer we get into December, closer to Christmas, a spruce is fine. Blue spruce is the best of the spruce for holding its needles, and Norway white spruce follow behind that. All trees, when you bring them in your house, though, need to be put in water immediately, fresh cut so they absorb the water. Yep. Keep your water level full. Eventually, the tree will slow down, but the first few days are important. That's when you get the most moisture into your tree. Remember, it is a live plant that's been cut, so it is perishable.
And how early do you start? I mean, you mentioned that you have 12 to 13,000 trees out. Like, how often are you putting the seedlings into the ground?
Every year we replant. So every year we go back through and we gap up, which means we fill in a spot that's been cut. Mm. Some fields I actually have trees that are like 5 to 6 foot tall. I've actually already pre-planted them. Your seedling in between each of them so that I can gain a year on my production. Just have to watch when people are cutting, they don't step on the little guys, but for the most part, we don't have too much casualty. My biggest problem is deer. Deer love trees. If they're not eating them, they're rubbing on them. So other than that, we restock every year. We plant upwards to 1,500 a year. The last couple of years we planted up 2,000 to really fill in every hole we had.
That's incredible. That really is. I am curious about, you know, I imagine that in the next few weeks, you're going to be getting a lot of families and couples and folks with little kids who might be picking their first tree for the first time. I'm curious what advice you have for a family or someone who might be picking the perfect right tree.
All right. First of all, come prepared. We're outside, folks. Please don't come in tennis shoes and sandals. To have an enjoyable day, come dressed. Bring the kids, make sure they're dressed warm. There's nothing worse than being wet and cold. Yeah. It's a bad experience. So you want to have a good experience. Come, enjoy the day. The fields are open for you to walk around. Take your time. Find the most beautiful tree you can find. Everybody has a different look. We have hot chocolate and cookies for the kids. So we keep them warm. We have a nice burn pot. We keep a fire going. So there is a warming station. Look around. There's other sights to see around here. We do have a farm here. There's chickens running around. Cows may or may not be in the field yet. They may have gone into the winter home.
Do you want to let folks know how they can find you?
Yes, you can find us. We have a website. It is friendlyacres.com or friendlyacresfarm.com. My daughter has we have a Facebook blog, and we do the website. We are located at 728 County Route 114 in Coshecton, New York, 12726. And we are nestled halfway in between Fosterdale and Route 97 at Coshecton. Love to have you folks come out and visit us. Enjoy the day, and you know, there's even the chance of seeing an eagle or two fly over the farm.
Thanks so much to Doug Deal of Friendly Acres Farm for letting me swing by. It was so much fun. You can find more information on their holiday hours and more on their website at friendlyacresfarm.com. Up next, you know what time it is, this week's Star Talk Report from Keith Hubbard.
Farm and Country. I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. This will be a great week to spot Mercury in the morning sky. It will be more than 10 degrees above the horizon at sunrise all this week. Mercury will begin the week about 10 degrees above the horizon, and by next Saturday, Mercury will be about 16 degrees above the horizon at sunrise. This will occur in the eastern sky, though it will be very low in the sky, so an unobstructed horizon will be needed to spot Mercury. Mercury is the closest planet to the Sun and is also the smallest planet in the solar system. Mercury is only slightly larger than Earth's moon, and it is smaller than Jupiter's moon Ganymede and Saturn's moon Titan. Mercury has a very tenuous atmosphere that does little to trap heat. As a result, it has the largest temperature swing of any planet in the solar system. Daytime temperatures reach a scorching 850 degrees Fahrenheit, while nighttime temperatures drop to a bone-chilling minus 275 degrees Fahrenheit. Due to its proximity to the Sun, it is only visible around sunrise or sunset. This week, Mercury will be visible starting around 6:30 a.m. and will remain visible for about 30 minutes. You may be able to use Venus as a guide to Mercury. Venus will be very bright and very low on the horizon in the southeastern sky. If you are able to spot Venus, Mercury will be the bright point of light 11 degrees above it. Look to the eastern horizon 30 minutes before sunrise all this week for your chance to spot Mercury. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thank you to Keith for this week's report from the stars. Well, in the next half of our show, we are talking about land access, which continues to be one of the most urgent issues that I hear from both land owners and farmland seekers here in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Nearly half of American farmers are expected to transition ownership in the next two decades. So what does that mean for land access? Here with me now is Brandy Colebrook. She's the executive director of the New York Agricultural Land Trust, which works with farmers across New York State to conserve agricultural and forest lands for many generations to come. Brandy, thank you so much for joining us this morning and welcome to Farming Country.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Well, why don't we start with, if you wanted to share a little bit more about the New York Agricultural Land Trust, what does the organization do exactly and what kinds of farmers do you work with?
Yeah, sure. The New York Agricultural Land Trust, or NYALT for short, has been around since 2006, and we focus primarily on farmland in central New York and a little bit in the southern tier area. And we hold conservation easements forever, so in perpetuity. And we have currently, we've preserved over 15,000 acres of land, farmland. And we also have, preserved 34 farms as well currently. So, we primarily just work with, we only preserve farms. We don't have any natural resource areas that we have that we own or have. So.
And tell me a little bit about some of the, I know you mentioned kind of geographically the areas that you're primarily concentrated in. What kind of farmers do you work with? Is it mostly farmers who have been doing this work for some time, beginner farmers, et cetera?
Yeah, it's mostly farmers who've been doing this for some time, and a lot of them are getting older and they're, want to make sure their farm stays a farm and it stays preserved. And so that's why they're really interested in conservation easements. But we mostly work with grain, dairy, and beef farms. But a lot of those farms also have a diversity of other businesses they have too. A lot of them have vegetable stands or they have agritourism businesses. We work very closely. One of the farms we have preserved is a farm brewery. So we have a wide variety of farms, but the majority are grain, dairy, and beef farms.
Well, I know that the Land Trust is hosting this upcoming workshop focused on land access. Tell me more about how you designed this workshop series and what you've been hearing from farmers so far.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to work with American Farmland Trust through the Regional Navigator Program. They're the ones who helped us fund this workshop series. And I partnered with Salt City Harvest Farm and also Pace University and the Farmers Land Trust. So we wanted to start this workshop series because in our line of work, we work with so many different farmers, and a lot of people reach out to us to ask if there's land available for sale. And a lot of times there just isn't any, and it's really hard to find the land for sale. And then sometimes when there is land for sale, it's just a piece of land, but there's no infrastructure on it. And it makes it really hard for beginning farmers to pay those startup fees right up front to either get irrigation to the site or build, infrastructure like sheds or barns, et cetera. It's just a lot of startup cost when you just buy a piece of land and then you have to buy the land. And also, everyone's competing with developers and now solar panel developers. So that's why we partnered with the Farmers Land Trust, they promote a farmer commons model, which is kind of a new approach to community farming. So that was our first workshop series to kind of introduce people to new, solutions or ideas for this land access issue.
And for folks who might not be familiar with farmer commons, can you kind of just briefly describe what that is exactly?
Yeah, farmer commons is basically a group of people getting together or organizations recognizing that, there are land access issues and finding a common piece of property or land that they can have a group of beginning farmers farm on. It's a little different than a normal like co-op model because there's an entity, usually a group of organizations that own the land, and they lease the land to the farmers forever for 99 years. So the lease is for 99 years, and that land stays in the organization. And sometimes there's conservation easements placed on it, sometimes there's not. So it just allows beginning farmers a more affordable route to farmland, and then, they can share equipment and buildings, et cetera.
Yeah, I know here in the Catskills, the Catskills Agrarian Alliance is working on a land access project, as you described, with the West, I think it's called the West Branch Commons. And that is kind of like a collaborative effort to bring young and BIPOC farmers together to share land in response to the reality that you mentioned, that land access is really challenging. I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between aging farmers and farmers seeking land. You know, nearly half of American farmers are expected to transition ownership in the next two decades. I'm curious what resources are available to connect aging farmers with farmers seeking land.
I would say the biggest resource right now is the American Farmland Trust has a website called Farm Finder, and landowners are able to go on there and list their land for either for sale or for lease. And then beginning farmers or land seekers are able to go on and search for farms that are available for either purchasing or leasing. And it has descriptions of each farm and what you know, the situation is with the farm and what kind of soil or what infrastructure is already there. It's all listed on Farm Finder, and you can just easily Google that to find it. Also, you know, there are other resources for landowners who, you know, are maybe ready to move on or retire, but they're not really sure what they want to do with their land or what they should do with their land. And so there's also services like Nationwide provides succession planning services. So, you know, they can reach out to them to figure out how to go about finding somebody to take over their land or to talk to their family and friends to find out if there's anybody, you know, who would want to take the land from them. Or if they don't, then how do they go about finding somebody who would, you know, use the land to farm? So those are some really great resources. And also, placing a conservation easement is another option, which obviously I specialize in. And there are many land trusts throughout the whole state that, you know, they could reach out to. You could just easily Google which land trusts are in your area and reach out to them to see if a conservation easement is another possibility. So conservation easements place restrictions on the land. So it has to be farmed, essentially.
And I know that the land trust has already had one workshop, as you mentioned, focused on kind of this introduction to the farmlands commons model. And there's several coming up. Do you want to just share what those dates are and what the workshops are specifically focused on?
Yeah. So the next workshop is this Wednesday at 6:30. And you can go to either Instagram or Facebook page to find the links for that and to sign up, or to also, you can also find it through Salt City Harvest Farm as well. The one that's this Wednesday at 6:30 is we are talking about land access issues in general, you know, like what are some of the common issues that I've already discussed, but in further detail. So Salt City Harvest Farm will be presenting on that, as well as Pace University. And then we have three more after that. They are every Wednesday at 6:30, but we are skipping the week of Thanksgiving. So the next one will be after that will be December 3rd. And that will be on land succession planning, which I will be presenting on, along with a landowner who already has a succession plan. And he's going to speak a little bit about his experience with finding someone to take over his land, and a younger farmer is taking over. So then after that, we will have the other sessions will be basically discussions on what we've learned from the previous presentations and what the possible solutions are for land seekers and landowners moving forward, and how they can maybe work together to solve some of these problems that land seekers and landowners have.
No, that's great to hear. And, you know, here in the Catskills, I'm constantly, especially with hosting Farm and Country, constantly in conversations with beginning farmers, young farmers, farm seekers, and land access is truly probably the number one issue that folks name. And so I'm so happy to hear that y'all are working on this workshop. If folks want to find more information, as Brandy described, you can check out their website, nyalt.org/land access. I've been chatting with Brandy Colebrook. She's executive director of the Newark Agricultural Land Trust. Brandy, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. And yeah, thanks for having me once again.
That's all for this morning's show. Well, however you might have been spending this holiday weekend, whether you stayed local or maybe you were traveling to see friends or family, I really hope that it was a safe one, a healthy one, obviously a delicious one. I think that during the holiday and winter time, it's a time of abundance, hopefully. So hopefully you were able to really lean into that. And I'll say that it is not over. In fact, today is Radio Catskills' big annual music sale happening right now until 3 p.m. We'll be at the Liberty Mall alongside lots and lots of vintage vinyl, CDs, stereo gear, instruments, and more. There's so much. It's one of those things that you just have to check out in person. Really hope to see some of you there. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Stick around. Up next, it's Travels with Triggs. You're listening to Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and PR. Catch you next week.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Morgan Outdoors, celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail, morgan-outdoors.com.
This Week in This American Life.
If you can't get 7 cars in 12 days, you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, holy, what are you kidding me?
A car dealership in Long Island tries to sell its monthly quota of cars, 129 cars. It's not going well.
I want balloons in the showroom. I just don't want one balloon to a car. Balloon the whole freaking place so it looks like a circus.
Will it work? Find out this week.
This American Life, tonight at 6 on Radio Catskill.
This week on CatsCast, Tim Byron is a lifelong outdoorsman with a popular YouTube video series.
It really goes back to when we started camping. I was maybe 7 or 8 years old, and my mom had one of those really big camcorders.
Plus, Michael DiBenedetto's passionate plea for copper bullets.
Knowing what I know now, I wouldn't use lead at all for any hunting.
Saturday at 11 a.m., right here on Radio Catskill.